This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's May 22nd, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hey.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Hey, Fran, what weekend is it that's coming up?
It is Memorial Day weekend.
Okay, you know what I got to say about that? Watch that bike. Memorial Day weekend. Shout out to both drivers and cyclists. Okay. Why drivers and cyclists? Because, yeah, there's going to be a whole bunch of us all out on the road this weekend, either driving in automobiles and trucks and or trucks that look like automobiles or whatever you want to call them. But anyway, and then lots of people on bicycles. And, you know, it's kind of like a kickoff weekend for the summer for a lot of people. So we're going to have an overabundance of people using the roads this weekend. And so I just wanted to do a shout out on that. If you're a driver of a motorized vehicle, just be patient. There are going to be people that may slow you down a little bit. Allow a little extra time, if you could, please. If you're a cyclist, be courteous. Make sure that you ride no more than two abreast if you are going to do that, and if it is legal where you are riding. And, you know, you just got to don't clog the roads, okay? Let's share the roads. Sharing is a way better idea. It makes it so the rest of us, when we're out riding our bicycles, we are given the level of respect that we are asking from the drivers of automobiles and trucks. So anyway, shout out. It is Memorial Day weekend. Hey, it's going to be a beautiful weekend. I believe we plan on doing some riding this weekend, don't we, Fran?
My daddy's going to be 82 in heaven.
Oh, I'm sorry. But we're doing a celebratory ride, right?
Well, what I like to do, I like to ride 82-something. So the first year that after his death was his 80th birthday. So our plan was to ride 80 miles for his 80th birthday. So I got a bunch of friends together, and we did 80-plus. We wound up often doing a little bit more just for route reasons. So we wound up doing 84 miles that year. Last year was the second year after his passing, and we went on a Thread City ride, and we added on to get 81 miles. And then on the Monday, we did 81K, and we had a gathering, and that was nice. And so this year will be his 82nd birthday. And so for my 80 miles, I went and I climbed Mount Wachusett.
Yay.
Ouch. Oh, my goodness. That was a big ride. So
That's a big shout out.
Oh, boy. Big shout out to the Charles River Wheelers. And if you're interested in climbing Mount Wachusett, so they routed us through some neighborhoods on the way up to the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some really steep pitches in those neighborhoods. And that was the hardest part of the ride. Then there's an actual, there's a ranger station, you know, and a stop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Before you go on the, there's a road that goes up to the climb to the summit. And that road is only a mile or two long, or maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles long. So then you ride up that, and there are some very steep spots on that, and it levels out, and then it's steep, and it levels out. And then there's that last little bit right when you get to the summit, and you can stop, and there's a tower up there, and there's some nice views and everything. And it's a little steep pitch there. And then you stop and you look around and it's very nice. And then you come back down. You basically come back down the way you went out and you go back to the ranger station. And then you continue on the ride. And it's very funny to look at my ride with GPS or the elevation tracking, because it goes up,
The visual on that is that Fran ran her finger along a very straight line, a flat line, and then she popped it way up in the air.
Way up in the air, and then came back. It
looks like on radio.
It looks like a normal curve.
Right.
It's very funny. So so I wound up doing 80 plus miles, and I was with two lovely gentlemen, one guy named Mike and another named Victor, and they were I wound up falling in pace with them. Then we realized that we were lost. And because now that I was lost, I had to stay with them. And so I stayed with them the whole ride. And they were lovely. We all took care of each other. And it was very funny. There was some interesting stuff that happened. And so we wound up and I thought that if the ride was only 80 miles, that I was going to go ahead and do another loop so I'd get 82. But that wasn't necessary because we wound up getting 88. So there you go. So on Monday, so this weekend, I don't intend to do any sort of an 80-mile ride. I'm going to either, you know, I'm going to do whatever TCC is doing on Saturday.
Right.
And then on Monday, we're going to do 81 or 82K,
right,
which is 51 miles. And we'll have some people perhaps do half of that. So
yeah.
So that'll, and we'll have a gathering and, you know, drink my dad's favorite drink and like that. And his actual birthday is Tuesday the 28th.
Right.
So we'll celebrate that though again. So that's nice because his birthday was always around on or around Memorial Day weekend. So we now it gives us a more pointed excuse to have a Memorial Day party.
Okay.
And just the Memorial Day party has to include at least a taste of a Gibson.
Parties are good.
Yeah, and also Planters Honey Roasted Peanuts.
Yeah, we are kind of like traveling into gin and tonic season.
Yeah, if you like that sort of, he's not, it's not a gin and tonic, it's a martini.
I'm not either, I'm just, you know.
No, I think we're out of gin.
Oh dear. Well,
and I'm not sure if we have the dry vermouth, I have to take a
look.
You're
in charge.
So we'll
or
take
we could
care.
Drink water.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I mean, people will just taste the Gibson and then have whatever else they want because not too many people like the Gibson.
Can't believe we're talking about liquor on the bicycle program.
We do. Because everyone knows that cyclists never drink alcohol.
Oh, never. Never. No. Yeah,
except
right.
for the post-ride beer that seems to be a part of every event. And, you know.
Yeah. Pre-ride coffee, post-ride beer. Yep.
Yeah.
It's kind of a staple.
So
anyway.
So Memorial Day weekend, you're right. Lots of people are going to be on bikes.
So we're going to keep our eyes open on Memorial Day weekend. And we as cyclists are going to behave ourselves on Memorial Day weekend.
And we're
going to
signal left and right.
And we're going to signal
and
left
point
and
straight.
Right. And point straight like we talked about last week.
And
right?
When somebody yells car back, we're going to get
right,
in single file.
Right. There you go. There you go. So on a positive side, the 2019 Fittest City of America Awards are out. Are you ready?
I want to hear this.
The American College of Sports Medicine has released its annual report of the fittest cities in the country. Okay. Arlington, Virginia came up on top.
Really?
For the second year in a row, followed by Seattle and Minneapolis. The bottom three cities were Oklahoma City, North Las Vegas, and Tulsa. Okay. So the 10 fittest cities. Are you ready? Arlington, Virginia. Seattle, Washington, Minneapolis, Minnesota, San Francisco, California, Madison, Wisconsin, no surprise, Washington, D.C., St. Paul, Minnesota, Irvine, California, I wouldn't have guessed that one, Denver, Colorado, that I would have guessed, and Portland, Oregon.
Yay, Portland, Oregon.
The worst, the least fit cities, Corpus Christi, Texas,
aww,
Arlington, Texas, Detroit, Michigan,
aww,
Bakersfield, California, aww, oh God, Bakersfield. Louisville, Kentucky.
What's with Bakersfield?
Oh, it's in the middle of the desert, kind of. It's kind of it's weird. Bakersfield's weird. Sorry if you're from Bakersfield and listening. I'm sure it's really lovely, and you can call me, and you can tell me how lovely it is, and I hope you ride your bike there. But anyway, it is Bakersfield, and it gets really, really hot there in the summertime. Louisville, Kentucky. Big surprise.
Aww.
Didn't expect to see that as the least fit city. With all the things that happen around Louisville and athletically, I'm surprised. Indianapolis, Indiana. Another aww, one I was surprised about. Toledo, Ohio. Tulsa, Oklahoma. North Las Vegas, Nevada. And Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Those are the 10 least fit cities.
I'm going to guess that the least fit cities have a socioeconomic issue.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, you can look them up, but
that's
it's,
generally the correlation there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
People are just, they're just working too hard, or they're not affluent, or they don't have the resources when you're talking about fitness, you're not necessarily talking about obesity. This is fitness.
But I think that probably falls into the same.
Well, they're probably not exactly the same, but if you're talking about fitness, this is about whether people exercise, they're exercising in terms of, if they're working on their farms versus, working out.
Well, the report is from the American College of Sports Medicine. So.
Because the cities that you mentioned that were on top are all relatively affluent, or they have affluent people in them, and they have a lot of infrastructure for fitness. They have a lot of infrastructure for exercise.
So in determining the rankings, the report looked at the 100 largest American cities and considered a variety of indicators ranging from walkability to air quality to park accessibility to rates of heart disease and stroke. So that's where the that's where the parameters are.
And if you've been to Portland, there's a park every 10 feet. I'm exaggerating, but there's parks everywhere. There's all kinds of lovely walkable neighborhoods. There's lots of trees, and you can get it from here to there on a bicycle very easily because there's, bike lanes marked everywhere. And there's a moderate climate. I mean, and, I know it does rain a lot, but it doesn't snow a lot. And so there's a lot of days of very moderate weather. So it's not too hot and not too cold. You mentioned Bakersfield gets wicked hot, right?
Oh, boy.
So places where it's wicked hot, people do not like to go outside.
Mm. Yeah, and that's true. And as far as Arlington goes, there's a quote here. The area is, quote unquote, very accessible by foot.
Yes.
Says Philip Lee, manager of the Arlington branch of the Potomac River Running Store. And he quotes, "I don't have a car and it's easy to get around. The running community around here is very supportive. There's a variety of clubs. And if I go for a run in the afternoon, I always see someone I know." So
they probably have bike infrastructure as well.
And Arlington is also the home of the Marine Corps Marathon, which is one of the really famous marathons in the U.S. that starts and ends at the Pentagon in October, has about 27,000 finishers. So this year will be their 44th running. And it ranks 7th on the ACSM's bike score. Minneapolis finished 1st in that category. So anyway, it's, there you go. The fittest cities in the country. Kind of cool. And then, of course, there's best bike cities in the country, which we've been through that one in the past. I'm going to pass over that one right now. And we are going to look at, from our positive side, we go to our maintenance minute. And this one is in relation to Fran. Of course, I found something that I can use for our maintenance minute. And she always says, what do you say, Fran?
Will you bless my bike?
Will you bless my bike? Well, I am not a particularly religious man, but
what does that mean, will you bless my bike?
Well, I sprinkle it with holy lube.
Right.
There you go.
And other things.
And other things.
You check it over.
And I check it over, and I make sure everything looks good for the ride. And as I checked it over, I found a few things. One was I found and you didn't even know about this because you have no idea what I do to your bike, but I found a cracked brake housing on the rear brake of the bike.
Wow.
So the housing is just fatigued and cracked right where it goes into the frame itself, and that can happen. And it was binding the cable a little bit in the back, and you probably didn't even notice your rear brake was working a whole lot better, but it was, at least in my estimation, it was. But that was one thing. But the big one, and this is like a daily. Every time you go out and ride your bike, you need to do this. You need to take a look at your tires carefully. Inspect those tires carefully. Okay, why do you inspect your tires carefully? Because what's the number one problem you're going to have on a bike ride? A flat tire, right? Pretty much, you're going to drop a chain or you're going to have a flat tire. Those are the two big ones that I see, especially in our group rides. So inspect your tires carefully. As I was inspecting Fran's bike, because she was getting ready to go out and ride 90 miles on her bicycle, I was looking it over and I found that her rear tire, which A, was wearing out, it was getting pretty worn down the center and it was starting to get a little thin. That was one problem, but that wasn't really the big problem. The big problem was there was a big gouge in the tire. So there was it looks like you had run over a chunk of glass or something. And it put a pretty good gouge in the tire. Fortunately, it was a really good tire. And even though I could see the casing of the tire where the rubber had been gouged away, it didn't really bulge there or anything, which means it probably would have been fine, but I replaced it because I don't want you to have any problems, because if you have a problem, who is the first person that gets called?
You.
Me, of course. So anyway.
Because I don't know how to change a tire, which is terrible, and
well,
I need to be taught how to change a tire.
You do, you just haven't been forced into it in a long time. That's all. So we should probably do that again. Hey, there's another one. If you're you know, if you're feeling a little rusty at changing tires, why don't you just take your rear wheel off of your bike? Don't do the front wheel. Front wheel's too easy. Take the rear wheel off the bike and change. Just deflate the tire, remove the tire from the rim, put the tire back on the rim, even if it's a fine tire, and put it all back together again. And make sure you can do that. And don't make sure you can do that like the day before. Do it when you have a little extra time. So, and you know, a little bit of practice is good. It really, you know, you'll get your head back into it, and you'll remember exactly how to do it again. It's great. Once you've done your first 1,000 tires, it gets even easier. So, being in the bicycle industry for 43 years, I have had the opportunity to change a couple of tires in my day, but which is why I have a really hard time watching other people change tires in front of me, because it drives me nuts. But anyway, they'll never learn unless they do it themselves. I have to keep telling myself that. So inspect those tires carefully. Here's another one. And this one, I just pulled this out because I was talking to someone about this recently. And I think there was a problem on one of the rides, possibly even last weekend. I can't remember exactly. But I do know that we ran into this problem when you were riding with your friend Donna one day. And I want to talk a little bit about rim strips today. The rim strip is that item that fits in the inside of the tire, on the rim itself, that keeps the spokes from poking through and poking your tube. You need to replace those. Like, I would say, you know, if you're using a fairly high pressure tire, I would say you should replace those once a year. I you know, you can get away without doing that, I'm sure. Depends on the type of rim strip you're using. But a lot of the new rim strips are made out of a very thin plastic, and they will crack right around the valve holes, and you gotta watch that. And they also tend to want to recess into the valve hole when you've got a lot of pressure in the tube. I'm not a big fan of the plastic rim strips. I know they make it a whole lot easier to put your very, very tight tire onto your rim, but I prefer ones that are a little thicker. And I tend to use the old-fashioned Jantex rim tape, and works really good. I've never had a problem with it, but it's a little bit thicker. It makes it a little bit harder for you to put your tire on and take your tire off. But to me, that's worth it. So rim strips, you should replace them occasionally. If you haven't ever replaced your rim strip on your bicycle and you've been riding around for years without a flat tire from the inside, I think you might want to take a look at that. And you're kind of biding time there. It's going to happen eventually. So replace your rim strip if it hasn't been replaced in a while. Next, okay, a few things. Last year we had a guest on, Stacy Jimenez, who was she's the president of the Quiet Corner New England Mountain Bike Association. And anyway, I happened to think about her, and I got another email from another gentleman with the NEMBA group here in the Quiet Corner. The Quiet Corner, by the way, if you are not familiar with it, is what they call the northeastern corner of Connecticut. And now that I'm shouting this out, I'm going to get myself in all sorts of trouble because, you know, we say Connecticut's Quiet Corner. Shh, don't tell anyone. Because if you like to ride your bike, though, you can come out. You can come out and join us. We love seeing people on bicycles out here. So anyway, a big shout out on these guys because they got a lot of things going on. And I've got to grab a hold of one of them. I hope someone is listening here. I did send an email back to try to coerce someone to come in to visit with us, because they've got so many things going on that are just really amazing. They have rides going on throughout the week. It's all mountain bike oriented, off road oriented rides, and it's really, really cool. So they have some events coming up, and one of them is this evening. They have a ride called the Hump Day Ride, which is actually going to be in our backyard. It's going to actually be at the at Mansfield Hollow State Park right here in Mansfield, Connecticut. And I'm not sure if they're leaving from Chaplin or from the Mansfield. I think they're leaving from Route 89 in Mansfield. But you can go to their website and check it out, and I'll bring them up again in events towards the end of the show. I will definitely bring them up. I'm just amazed as I flipped over to their website, and that would be www.nemba.org, and then there's a /chapters/QC NEMBA, which would be Quiet Corner NEMBA. Lots of cool stuff going on. These people are really active. If you're an avid mountain biker, you really need to meet them. They're great folks. They're really into it. They're really into promoting the sport. They've got Saturday morning rides. They've got a Wednesday women's ride. It's only for women. That's really cool. Other upcoming things on the 1st of June, they've got a Goodwin Natchog Epic Fun Ride. There's just, if you have not met Northeastern Connecticut's off-road scene, this is the way to do it. These folks know their way around, and you will be amazed at what we have to offer here in the northeastern corner of the state. Pretty cool stuff. A lot of people, whenever I've taken them for road rides and they're not from around this area, have said to me, "This is Connecticut?" That's always the big question. And yeah, it is. We're a little different up here in the corner. So it's still May, folks. It's still bicycle month. Yay, it's still bicycle month. That's a good thing. Did you ride your bike to work on Bike to Work Day? Were you someone who participated in the International Ride of Silence the Wednesday before that? May is like a special month. There's so much going on. I have to also shout out to Mike from Eastford. Our friend of the show, Mike from Eastford, came on last week. Probably one of my, I will say one of the better shows that we have recorded here at WHUS. Mike came in with lots of information about autonomous vehicles. We've been having this discussion for a while, and we really hit on some good subject matter. We are gearing up for some follow-up shows with this because there's so much out there that is available as far as information, and yet there's so little out there as far as what is happening to people who are walking or riding their bicycles on the road, otherwise known in my world as soft, squishy things. So anyway, we hit on a lot of stuff, and Mike, it was just great to have you on the show. It was awesome. I know you're listening because you're such a good listener. So I just want to thank you once again. You sent me over a link this morning about GM having a report out on their autonomous vehicles and what they're doing, and there wasn't any mention whatsoever by General Motors about the soft, squishy things. So, you know, car manufacturers, get it together. Let's do something about this. You got to pay attention. We are going to drive this thing home all the way. You're not going to, I will talk about this a lot. There's just so many things. You go to a Forbes magazine, driverless cars will kill cyclists, warns Nature magazine. In Forbes, this was. So, there's more than just Mike and I that are aware of this and that are concerned about this. And if you are concerned about this, I want you to talk to your local legislators. You need to write to your senators, your congressmen, anything. Let them know how you feel about this, because the research is not being done properly here in the United States. And I'll add to that in just a moment here. But This is a critical moment. We really, really need to pay attention to this. There's a in the UK, okay, there's a site called We Are Cycling UK, and they have concerns. Autonomous cars on UK roads by 2021. Are cyclists safe? And the UK government wants fully autonomous vehicles on the roads by 2021. What does that mean for the safety of cyclists? And should we be concerned? And yeah, we should be concerned. There's a lot going on here. There's a lot of things that need to be checked out. This site says the government needs to proceed with extreme caution if it plans to allow driverless vehicles on our roads. And that was from Roger Geffen, the Cycling UK's policy director. You know, we're really stepping off of a cliff here, and we need to take a look at where we're going to land if we're going to step off the cliff. Another quote here was, autonomous vehicles could be placed in a situation where they have to make Sophie's choice, which is such as whether to save a passenger or hit another road user, such as someone who is cycling. How can a machine make this decision? And that's from Sam Jones, Cycling UK's Senior Campaigns and Communications Officer. So we're not the only ones, Mike, that are out there talking about this. This is worldwide. It's a big deal, and it's definitely something we need to keep our eyes open on. Autonomous cars may have a lot of benefits, and they may keep the people who are at the risk of sleeping at the wheel alive and keeping them from running into someone else and causing an accident. But, you know, there's other people, there's other human beings that are out using the roads. And, you know, I had a Safety Resource Center website here. It says, the problem that cyclists cause for self-driving cars. Isn't that great? What a great statement. The problem that cyclists caused for self-driving cars? Give me a break. We were here first. We were on the first paved roads in the United States. Look at the history books. This is just, I read things like that, and it just gets me all angry and ready for Mike to come back in again, and we're gonna talk some more about this. But, you know, this is a problem which is being created with people, against people that are the end users that are good for our environment, that are good for our health and fitness, that are good for a lot of things, that are good for the fact that we don't break down the infrastructure as much as the big heavy vehicles do. That would be an interesting, I would like to know what the weight is of an average motor vehicle in the United States and where it was 10 years ago. I would really like to know that. If anybody has that information, send it over to me. BicycleTalk1@gmail.com. Peddlin' Ron is interested in learning more. There's so much more that needs to be done. There's so much education. There's so much infrastructure change which needs to happen. And it's like they're pushing the envelope on this autonomous vehicle thing without thinking clearly and thinking it all the way through. Unless, of course, you're Volvo. Okay, this is interesting. This, from March 5th of 2013, Volvo Car Group reveals the first cyclist detection with full auto brake in Geneva. Okay, so Volvo thought about it. How does it work? Good question. It's a combination of a radar system and also a camera system, but they are actually looking at it as this being a problem. In 2013, it's 2019 right now, they already started doing their research on it a long time before, 6 years before. So automatic braking, a cyclist in the same lane swerving out in front of a car, is one incident type that it's addressed by the pedestrian and cyclist detection with full auto brake, which will be available on Volvo V40s all the way through the S80 models from mid-May of 2013. So they already have this system in their vehicles. The advanced sensor system scans the area ahead. If a cyclist heading in the same direction as the car suddenly swerves out in the front of the car as it approaches from behind and a collision is imminent, there is an instant warning and full braking power is applied. The car's speed has considerable importance for the outcome of an accident. A lower speed of impact means that the risk of serious injury is significantly reduced. So, and the way they do this is they're combining camera and radar, pedestrian and cyclist detection, they call this PCD, with full auto brake, consists of a radar unit integrated into the car's grille, a camera fitted into the front of the interior rear view mirror, and a central control unit. The radar's task is to detect objects in the front of the car and to determine the distance to them. The camera determines the type of objects. Thanks to the dual mode radar's wide field of vision, pedestrians and cyclists can be detected early on. The high resolution camera makes it possible to spot the moving pattern of pedestrians and cyclists. The central control unit continuously monitors and evaluates the traffic situation. The auto brake system requires both the radar and the camera to confirm the object. With the advanced sensor technology, it is then possible to apply full braking power immediately when necessary. The technology also covers the vehicles driving in the same lane. So, yay Volvo. Big shout out to Volvo Motors. Hey, they figured it out. They haven't figured it out, but they're trying. And I have to give them credit on that. General Motors, you doing this? Ford Motor Company? Any chance? Anybody out there? Volkswagen? Come on. Toyota? You guys doing this? I want to know. Call me. Let me know. Reach me on Facebook, on Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk, the number one at gmail.com. Anybody out there work for any of these companies? I want to hear the answer. I want to hear what they're doing for preventatively keeping a major problem from happening. It's because Volvo seems to be on top of it. So I will research this a little bit further and see where they've gone with it and see how it goes. But I think this is a really big thing. And I thought I would shout them out because I discovered it when I was stumbling about looking for some material for the show. So we need to definitely keep our eyes open on this whole autonomous vehicle thing, this self-driving car, this self-correcting lane correcting car. It just makes me nervous. That's all. It just makes me really, really nervous. And will we require people to learn how to drive these cars in a more responsible fashion? Because you can't just get behind the wheel of the car and let it do its thing. You still have to have a human being in there to make decisions. So, anyway, best way to make decisions like that, put down your cell phone. Thank you. Stop looking at your center console. Thank you. Giro. It's the Giro. Yay, we're into the Giro. The Giro is great. I love the Giro. The Giro d'Italia, one of my favorite races out there. We're back to some flat stages. Today's stage 11, 220 kilometers.
How are you watching it?
How am I watching it?
Yeah.
I get little snippets online from YouTube, and also I read about it. There are a number of different little sites that I found which are kind of interesting that you can get pieces of information from. And let's see here. Where did I find? No, that's a different one. But there's...
I find it really frustrating that it's hard for like regular people to just find it and watch it.
I just catch little pieces. There are pay sites out there, so you can actually purchase a month's worth of or up to a year's worth of bicycle activity, but it's become pretty blocked recently. Unfortunately, it was something that you could access through sites like Steep Hill TV, and that was always good, but it seems like the media has grabbed control of those. So a big shout out to NBC Sports for doing that. That's not a positive shout out. It's just a shout out. They want to make money off of it. I understand that. I definitely understand that people need to make money, but they ask an awful lot per month for the service, and I'm not real happy with that. So, and I was very, very happy to just watch the race in Italian and not know what they were saying, but understanding that the excitement that the commentators were having and my knowledge of the bike races was good enough as far as that goes. So anyway, it's the Giro is on and it's happening, and today is a pan flat stage, okay, of 221 kilometers. They're going to finish the last 3 kilometers are virtually straight with some roundabouts in between that will require no major diversions. Yay. No more major crashes. There have been a lot of crashes. Thomas Dumoulin, he's out. He went out in stage 4, crashed out bad. He's trying to get himself back enough so he can get back into the Tour de France. But he was a major contender in this race. I think he won it last year, didn't he? I think that's it. But anyway, so if you take a look, I actually have a profile there, Fran, that I sent you over. If you're looking at it right now, stage 16, it is flat. So, but
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't get any flatter than that. It's really flat.
Have you been to my mother's house?
Yeah, looks a lot like Florida. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty darn flat.
Yes, so I went on a rail trail ride and I climbed 70 feet.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. But, you know, the route is different. There's a route link that I sent over to you also. So things are going to change very, very rapidly in the next couple of days. What we're looking at is, okay, so right now we are on number 11, stage 11. So stage 12, it flips over to... definitely, we're going to start rolling here a little bit when we get there. So it's you're going to start seeing some rolling hills. But what I was really concerned about is, and this is kind of interesting, is that there is stage, is it 16 or 17? I'm trying to remember which one it was. Oh, gosh, I can't find it now. But anyway, it's going... it's going over the Gavia, which is its huge climb, Gavia Pass. And there was when I last looked at it, there was, oh my God, there was like seven meters of snow that had fallen. I mean, that's a lot of snow. And so they were trying to clear it and get it clear enough so they can get through Gavia Pass. And it's, it will be interesting to see. There's some great photos that I saw on this. And this is not unusual. It's the Giro. The Giro does, it goes through some very serious mountains. And it's still May. So you get up into the Italian Alps and there's still snow up there. The profile on the Gavia stage, which is stage 16 is what it is. And we are on stage 11 or 12 today.
7 meters is almost 23 feet.
It's a lot of snow.
By the way, when I was at the top of Wachusett.
I'm sure it didn't all fall at once.
When I was at the top of Wachusett, there were two patches of snow left.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As I was climbing to the top. Because Wachusett sits at 2,000 feet.
I forgot to ask you on that. Yeah. When you were at top of Wachusett, could you see Boston?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it clouded in?
I didn't know to look. I didn't know to look for it. I mean, I have some views. I didn't know to look for it. I mean, is there a place that says Boston? Well, I didn't climb the tower.
You can see it from the top of Mount Greylock,
I know. There's a tower at the top of Mount Wachusett that you can climb up, and it probably has, signs this way to Boston, this way to this and that and the other thing. But I didn't look.
Well, that's one of those things you do when you get
look
to the top
for Boston.
Of
Boston.
Yeah. You look for Boston. Or
I definitely
whatever.
Looked around and took pictures and stuff.
Anyway, so the Passo Gavia is hopefully going to be open. They're calling it the Queen Stage, Giro d'Italia's Queen Stage next Tuesday. Having seen heavy snowfall, the Gavia has been a concern for some weeks. And the race organizers say that there's a 60% chance the roads will be cleared ahead of stage 16 as it comes through. But the peak is over 2,600 meters. It's not always possible to go up and over the Gavia in May. Indeed, in 2013, the organizers were forced to cancel the stage that had planned to climb the Gavia and the Stelvio due to snow conditions. Even the proposed alternative route proved to be too dangerous. Stage 16 of the 2019 Giro d'Italia is set to be the Queen Stage at 226 kilometers with the Gavia, this year's highest point, the the Chimacopi as the highest point in the route, followed by the Mortororo ahead of the descent towards the Ponte.
I should be helping you pronounce this stuff.
You please.
Okay,
anytime. Just hop in anytime. Okay. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're through it anyway. But this is, if you take a look at the profile on stage 16, it's like, it's an ouch, followed by a little bump ouch, followed by a
quick descent. Oh, my goodness. Look at all that snow.
Followed by, if you go through those photos, you'll see the rest. It just
They're
go through.
Tunneling through the snow. That's crazy.
Oh, I know. That's what they do. They tunnel through the snow. They do. So anyway, the profile for stage 16 is it makes my legs hurt just looking at it. I can't imagine what it's going to be like. So, and there are others like that. It's the Giro. It's because it's the Giro. The Giro has some of the most epic climbs there are, and you see so many pictures of riders. I mean, there's a picture here of the Gavia Pass in 1960, and you can still, there's snow on the road, and then there's big banks of snow that people are standing up on top of shouting out. It's very, very deep into the mountains. So they seem to feel that they will not be canceling them this year, that they're going to get it all cleared. From the notes that I have here, it sounds like we're going to make it. So we'll see what happens. Great stuff coming up in the Giro if you are into the Giro. And as you can tell, I am. So it's going to be a fun time. So there is a very interesting young man who is, and you might be able to help me with this too, is Primoz Roglic, I believe is his name. And he rides for the Jumbo Lotto team, and he is not the current leader of the tour, but he has some of the best overall capacity that there is out there. So he's probably going to kick it in pretty seriously. And with Tom Dumoulin out after a crash at stage four, he's in contention with he rivals Vincenzo Nibali. And Simon Yates, he had a killer time trial. He's a great time trialist. There are three time trials in the Giro this year. This could be the moment that we get possibly one of the youngest riders to finish to win the Tour of Italy, the Giro d'Italia. We'll see. He's a Slovenian former ski jumper. He's a former ski jumper, and he is a favorite to win in the 2019 Giro. He came out of nowhere, and he is a phenomenon to watch, and it will be interesting. And the big thing about young riders, and this is my observation on this, is if he can maintain his form on his bike, and I mean that not just by fitness, but by his ability to ride the bicycle well, then he will probably be the best young rider in the race, and not to mention the winner of the race. He's just amazing. He's truly amazing. So we're going to keep our eyes on Roglic and see what he does in the Giro this year. But it's going to be fun to watch. If you're into this race at all, this is definitely a fun time. It's a really, really fun time. So keep your eyes open. So why does this all matter? By winning the first two time trials, Roglic put himself in an ideal position. He leads all his rivals by significant time gaps, and he somehow managed to do it without taking the pink jersey. This means he and his teammates won't have to defend it before the first set of mountains at the end of the second week. Instead, they can sit back, rest, and let the other teams do all the work, which they certainly will. And they're going to be able to vary. It's going to be a really interesting strategic race. So I can't wait, can't wait, can't wait. It's coming. It's coming. There's some big, big stages coming up. Riders like Fausto Coppi and Gino Bartali from the past that have won on these major climbs. There's just This is good stuff. It's all good stuff. If you get a chance and you get a chance to look any of this up online, find Primož Rožlík and take a look at how he looks on a time trial bike. It's just beautiful. He just looks like he belongs there. He's got a perfect position on the bike. It's classic. It's classic. This guy is the true efficiency of what a great rider looks like on a bike. So I can't wait. I'm finding it very exciting. We got a new rider. He's very exciting to watch. There's good stuff going on in the Giro. If you're not watching the Giro, watch the Giro. It's fun. It's good stuff. So let's talk about women and bicycle racing and professional bicycle racing and what's going on in the world of pro bike racing with women in general. So this race, which is going to be, it's basically going to be in three different countries, and it will be called the Battle of the North for its Scandinavian setting. It's going to be in three different countries, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. And it is trying very hard to become the Tour de France for women. So it's slated to become one of the classics that for women's racing. And I think it's great. I think it's great. So we're going to keep our eyes open on that one, too, and see what happens there. While it's shorter than a three-week Grand Tour in men's cycling, the planned race organizers have wasted no time in dubbing it the Tour de France for women. So we're going to keep our eyes on this because this is a really important thing. Getting the women's cycling scene up there on the map is really good. It has not been good over the years, and it would be really, really nice to see the development of women's cycling. And so anyway, that's what's going on here with women's racing. And so I'm excited to hear what is going to happen there. The Tour of California is next on my list. It's over. It's done. The Tour of California is done. We have overall standings. It was won by someone from SLO. That will be Slovakia. Would that be? Is that what you?
Probably. Slovakia. Slovakia.
Yeah.
Republic.
Yeah. This is Tadej Pogačar. So anyway, was in first. We don't see an American rider in the Tour de California until number 9, TJ Van Garderen. So yeah, and he was down 1 minute here. TJ was down 1 minute and 22 seconds from the leader. So it was a pretty interesting race. There were some really big climbs in it this year. And it is developing, and when you take a look at the list of people and the countries that they came from, I think the Tour of California is starting to get some serious legs. I think that it's starting to get a lot more international interest. We're seeing an awful lot going on here in the Tour of California. So let's keep our eyes open on that, too, because we do not have – you would think that we would have a lot more American riders finishing up on this, but they are not. There's a lot of competition coming through. There's a good women's race here too. There's a definitely a very solid women's race that is happening at the Tour of California. Also, once again, our first U.S. rider was Krista Dobell Hickok, and she was 7th overall in the Women's Tour of California. So we got stuff going on in the Tour of California. Some takeaways from it. There's some great, California has some great wide straight roads, and they make ideal laboratory for the stars of the future to build confidence and equipment and experiment with new roles on their way to the world tour greatness. There's going to be young stars here from the U.S. There's going to be young stars coming in from other countries. This is definitely a race that we want to keep our eyes on for the future, because I do believe it's starting to really gain a lot more popularity. I know that because it is a U.S. race, it does get a lot more U.S. television coverage, which is nice. And why am I happy about that? Because it shows people that there are other sports out there besides, you know, the ball sports. And it's, you know, it's a very exciting time to show bicycle racing. So we'll see where that goes. We'll see where that goes. There's also going to be a big, I believe that the Colorado racing scene is definitely coming back, and that's solid. From years ago, we used to have, we go way, way back to the Red Zinger Classic. Anyone remember that one? Celestial Seasonings put on a big stage race out there, and then it was the Coors Classic, and it was all Colorado-based, and some epic climbs in the Rocky Mountains, good stuff. So that is also coming back in a different way this year. So there's just a bunch of good stuff happening right now. I'm going to move on to events. We're just about done here. We've got coming up, I had mentioned all the cool things that are happening with the our folks out there in the Quiet Corner. And they've got lots of mountain bike activity going on this weekend, this evening at Mansfield Hollow. And we've got lots of cool stuff going on. Bike Walk Connecticut has a bunch of things coming up. They have an upcoming bicycle summit on June 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., implementing complete streets and Vision Zero in Connecticut strategies and success stories. And it's held at the University of New Haven in West Haven. Other items that will be there, including the League Cycle Instructor Seminar, which is in Hartford and sponsored by the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford. That's July 19th through July 21st. I jumped around a little bit on my calendar here, but because before that, we have the Wethersfield Bicycle Show, Swap Meet, and Festival, and that will be at Wethersfield High School, and you can find out more about that for June 9th on that one on Facebook. And then we have Ride Around the Quabbin, Saturday, June 15th, and we have the King's Tour of the Quabbin. Fran's going to do it.
I might. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. Saturday, June 15th. Not much traffic, plenty of hills. It's not a race.
Don't forget the 14th annual John E. Jackman Tour de Mansfield.
Yeah, you have a date on that for me, please?
Yes, it is Saturday, June 8th, 2019, with a rain date of Sunday, June 9th, 2019.
Wow. Well, we'll be away at a Farm to Fork Fondo, unfortunately,
yeah,
for that. But
Well, last year we rode to it, said hello, and then
drove
away.
And then we have to drive away. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so two items coming up on the 28th of July, and one is the, which I have been talking about for a while, the George Street Bicycle Challenge for Major Taylor. If you want to race your bicycle for less than a quarter of a mile, this is where you do it. It's where Major Taylor used to practice and do his intervals back in the 1890s, which made him one of the best cyclists in the world. So anyway, that's if your interest is a little longer than doing a quarter mile hill climb on an unbelievably steep hill, you can come out to the TCC Thread City Cyclers Century on July 28th. If you want to find out more about that, it's threadcitycyclers.com. More coming up on that in the future. And once again, Fran and I will be away for a number of weekends this summer, going to our Farm to Fork Fondos with our friends at Renegade Sports. And there are 8 events this year, possibly 7. Talk to you about
8.
That later. I'll talk to you about that later. But they are scattered all over the East Coast, and it should be a good time. And I, Pedal, and Ron will be there emceeing and announcing the events. So if you want to come out and meet us, Fran is always there with me. She's a faithful follower of the Farm to Fork Fondos, and we have some really good times going there. Great group. Anyway, my name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS stores.